This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
In the driver's seat, a turn of events puts a new CEO at the helm of Ford. But is it enough to get the automaker back in the race and reverse the stock's decline?
New highs. Defense stocks rise on a massive weapons deal. Could they climb even higher?
Safety concerns. 10 million people have osteoporosis, but serious side effects are now clouding a promising treatment. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for this Monday, May the 22nd. Good evening, everybody. I'm Bill Griffith in tonight for Tyler Matheson, just sitting here waiting patiently for everybody.
You got stuck in traffic.
I did.
Thanks so much. All right, I'm Sue Herrera. We start out tonight with a shakeup at an iconic American company. The CEO of Ford is out. Mark Fields is being replaced by a former office furniture executive known for his ability to turn companies around. As we've been reporting, pressure was mounting at the automaker to reverse the floundering stock price and to better compete against General Motors and Tesla in developing the next generation of electric and self-driving cars. The news sent shares of Ford accelerating, rising more than 2% in trading today. Phil LeBeau has more on the surprising change and the future of Ford.
With Ford shares hanging close to a five-year low, Bill Ford and the automaker's board of directors made a dramatic shift, ousting Mark Fields less than 3 years after he became CEO.
We need to be quicker in our decision-making. We need to have clarity in our messaging and in our communication. And that's something, and we also need a leader who's transformed a company before.
The new CEO is Jim Hackett, 62 years old. While his time at Ford as a director and most recently running the company's mobility division has been limited, Hackett has seen enough to know the automaker needs a fresh approach, one that echoes the winning formula of former CEO Alan Mulally.
In Alan's era, he did this really special thing to get the company to be a community again with this structure that he created in the One Ford strategy. It worked really well. And in fact, we're going to use parts of it in the way that we monitor our success.
Ford is not a lost cause. It's still on track for one of its most profitable years ever, but it won't be as profitable as General Motors. Meanwhile, upstarts like Tesla and Waymo are well ahead of Ford developing future technologies like self-driving cars. But the biggest challenge facing Jim Hackett will be changing the culture of a company more than 100 years old.
He needs to hit the ground running and be that person that makes people want to come to work in the morning. And that's really hard to do when you're dealing with a company as old and entrenched, potentially, as Dearborn really has shown itself to be.
The initial reaction of Wall Street to Jim Hackett is to give him the benefit of the doubt. He could revive shares of Ford, but until he lays out his game plan, few expect Ford shares to move dramatically higher. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Chicago.
So with Ford struggling, are there others in the automotive industry better positioned for the future? Richard Hilgert is with us tonight to share his thoughts. He's senior automotive analyst at Morningstar. Good to see you, Richard. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me tonight, Bill.
Before we get to the others, what about Ford? Is Jim Hackett the guy, and what do you expect to happen there?
Yeah, you know, I think that Ford Motor stock compared to, say, for example, General Motors, Fiat Chrysler, some of the other companies that compete in the U.S. market, Ford's gotten into a product cycle lull in the near term here, and we're seeing more product come out from, say, for example, General Motors or Fiat Chrysler, you know, and because of that, there might be a little bit more excitement in the dealerships at GM and at Fiat Chrysler, but this isn't to count Ford Motor Company out. You know, we go
right
through product cycles all the time in the automotive industry.
But is he enough of a disruptor, as he was in his previous category, to turn a company like Ford around?
Well, you know, the only evidence that we have is what he did as CEO of Steelcase for 20 years. And at Steelcase, he was a visionary enough to be able to tell the direction that the market was heading for office furniture. Instead of having cubicles or individual offices, it was going into more of an open environment.
Right.
And he saw that in advance. So you got to give him credit for that and changing the company's culture and moving towards something that was coming down the line that might not have been readily apparent to others at the time. So,
okay.
You know, he might be able to transfer that visionary outlook to Ford Motor Company.
Clearly,
for sure.
The automotive industry is in a transformation, technologically speaking. I mean, with driverless cars, with all the gadgets and things that are in current cars, electric cars, who do you think's best positioned to take advantage of that? And it is moving along at this point.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I'm going to segregate my comments from the valuation of the stock versus where the companies are positioned. But companies that we think that are really positioned well for technological changes that are occurring in the automotive industry are really in the supply base. Companies like Autoliv, BorgWarner, Continental, Delphi, Lear Corporation. These companies all predominantly have electronics and electrical architecture. BorgWarner, on the other hand, is positioned within propulsion, the parts that make the cars go. So, you know, they're really well positioned for the electrification.
Okay.
But in terms of valuation, we think that Autoliv is fairly valued at this point. Continental, Delphi, Lear are overvalued.
Okay.
We like BorgWarner. We think it's undervalued. And we like Magna. Magna has also similarities to BorgWarner in it makes parts that make wheels turn. But they also have autonomous systems that can go into these advanced electronic technologies that are going into cars.
Got it. We've got it all written down. Thank you for your insights.
All right.
Richard Hilgert with Morningstar.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks.
Meantime, on Wall Street, defense stocks helped lift the major averages after more than $100 billion worth of arms deals were inked between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia over the weekend. On Friday, we told you that those deals were likely to happen. Investors also brushed off North Korea's successful test of an intermediate-range ballistic missile. Today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed just about 90 points to 20,894. The Nasdaq added nearly 50, and the S&P 500 rose 12.
More now on the defense sector that Sue just mentioned. Shares of Lockheed Martin, Dow Component Boeing, General Dynamics, and Raytheon all rose on the weapons deal between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia reached over the weekend. The price tag was massive and could potentially grow. Morgan Brennan has more details for us tonight.
It wasn't business as usual when President Trump visited Saudi Arabia over the weekend. His first international trip as commander-in-chief spurred a flurry of big-ticket business deals, many of them centering around security in the region.
America is prepared to stand with you in pursuit of shared interests and common security. But the nations of the Middle East cannot wait for American power to crush this enemy for them.
That sentiment was the impetus behind a new $110 billion weapons package, one of the biggest arms deals ever struck, that could, according to the administration, grow to $350 billion over the coming decade. Lockheed Martin announced $28 billion in potential new business, including Black Hawk helicopters, a revived deal for combat ships, and the prospective sale of an advanced missile defense system. Raytheon and General Dynamics announced deals, and Boeing struck agreements for defense aircraft as well as for commercial wide-body planes. Some sales had already been approved under President Obama, but many more will require approval from Congress and the Defense Department. Analysts say that timing and the details are less certain. But Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who accompanied the president in Riyadh, is optimistic.
It'll take congressional approval in some cases. I don't think that's going to be a big deal. These are our allies. They're important allies. And these weapons, if you analyze them, are as much for defense as for anything else.
But defense won't be the only industry to reap the spoils of more trade with the kingdom. General Electric said it reached more than $15 billion worth of deals. Blackstone Group's infrastructure fund picked up a $20 billion investment from the kingdom's sovereign wealth fund. And Saudi Aramco signed $50 billion worth of deals with American oil and services companies. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Morgan Brennan.
Well, the defense stocks, many of them, are at record highs on the Trump-Saudi deal. And historically, following agreements like that one, the sector outperforms the broader market over the next month. Richard Safran is the aerospace analyst at Buckingham Research, and he joins us here on the set to talk more about that. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Always great to be here.
And you're relatively bullish on this sector.
Not relatively, very bullish on this sector. Absolutely correct. I think the sector's got plenty of ramp left in it. I think the deal that we saw, you know, over the weekend with Saudi Arabia is just one bit of evidence that defense remains a very high priority, not only with international governments, but the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm. We saw, though, early in the Trump administration, the president was very concerned about costs. And I know you like Lockheed Martin, for example, and he was very concerned about the cost of the F-35 fighter jet. Will their profit margins be squeezed if, even though we're talking about a big defense contract, they're forced to bring those costs down?
Well, first off, I tend to think that, you know, this is exactly what we want from a president, from an administration. You know, as taxpayers, I think it's a good idea when anybody says, you know, we want to get costs down. So that I think that that's good. But to your point about margins, no, actually, I don't. I think this president absolutely wants to get the best price for things, but he also knows about good business. He certainly knows about good business. And so I think that, you know, for example, Lockheed Martin recently, so you mentioned Lockheed.
Right.
Lockheed Martin recently signed the latest contract for the F-35 with double-digit margins, right? So I think that the president understands good business. I don't think there's going to be margin pressure, but I do think there's always going to be this focus on cost.
You also like L3 technologies, and that's against a background of you're expecting defense to grow on an average of 6% annually versus, I think, most street expectations are significantly lower than that.
Absolutely right. So I think that the addressable part of defense spending, so, you know, defense spending has a number of buckets in it, you know, pays for military
right.
personnel, things like that. I think that the addressable part of defense spending is going to grow at about a 6% on average for the next several years. I think that what that's going to do is benefit companies like L3, which benefit a lot from readiness. One of the things that we're going to need to spend on immediately is getting the state of the force up and improve that, et cetera. And, yeah, I think that's right. I think that expectations are really for like 2 to 3% right now. And so my bullish thesis would say that I think that growth is going to be substantially more than what expectations are.
And for the foreseeable future, I mean, very quickly, you believe that spending cycles in defense go maybe 20 years or so.
Actually, right, absolutely right. I think that 2016 starts the next uptick in a defense spending cycle. And again, you're right. You know, if I look historically, defense spending generally moves in 20-year cyclical patterns. And I think we're just starting the uptick of a new one right now.
All right, Richard, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Richard Safran with Buckingham Research.
Still ahead, 15 years after going public, Netflix looks a lot different today than it did then, and there could be even more changes to come.
The Trump administration asked a court to put on hold an Obamacare-related case. The case involves federal payments that insurers use to lower deductibles and co-payments for some people who purchase individual policies on the health exchanges created by the Affordable Care Act. The delay increases uncertainty, though, for insurers who are trying to set rates for plans that have to be sold next year. The payments amount to about $7 billion. The president and Republican lawmakers are working on legislation to overhaul the health care system.
An experimental breast cancer drug appears to be effective, but a preliminary review by the FDA also shows that there is some uncertainty as to the magnitude of that benefit. The treatment is made by Puma Biotech, and the initial review sent shares up by 39%. A panel of outside advisors to the FDA will meet on Wednesday. They'll be talking about the drug and whether to recommend it to be approved.
Amgen no longer expects its experimental osteoporosis drug to win U.S. approval this year. That is because serious heart-related side effects were observed in a late-stage clinical trial. The setback pressured Amgen's shares. They fell more than 2%. Meg Terrell is following the story for us from the New York Stock Exchange tonight. Meg, good to see you. The drug worked. The stock is down. And how concerning are the side effects?
Well, so these side effects were concerning enough that Amgen, which had expected an FDA decision on this drug by July, no longer expects the FDA to be able to review the drug on that timeline. Now, this was a late-stage study. The drug had already been through a lot of other clinical trials, and this is the first time, really, that anybody had seen this potential side effect. Now, what they observed was a potential heart risk for the drug. They said it was serious adverse events related to cardiovascular issues. So we don't know exactly what they were, but clearly pretty concerning here.
What's the future of the drug then in the meantime? And what does this mean for Amgen? I happen to know that they have, what, 59% of the market for osteoporosis. How big a hit is this for them?
That's right. So they already do have some osteoporosis drugs available. This one was going to be sort of a continuation of that franchise. You know, some analysts are taking their models for this drug completely out of what they expect for Amgen in the future. Others say maybe a 50-50 chance, but there is going to be a significant delay. And so you are seeing some competitors, including Radius Health, getting a little bit of a boost today. They just had a new osteoporosis drug approved in April, seeing perhaps less competition for them. In terms of Amgen, though, this is a little bit of a blow today.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. So obviously there are some other options for osteoporosis, but how many?
There are quite a few drugs out there for osteoporosis already. We mentioned that one from Radius Health, which just got approval in April. A lot of the drugs that are available are generic drugs, which makes this even more sort of a pressure-filled environment because generic drugs are a lot cheaper, preferred by insurance companies, and doctors often prescribe them a little bit more. So newer, more expensive drugs already have kind of an uphill battle in gaining market share. But still, clearly, there is a need for new drugs in this space. A lot of people have osteoporosis and need better options.
And it just points out, you and I were discussing this earlier today, the risks involved in this business, even for a large established company like Amgen. It's never a guarantee, is it?
It never is. Drug development is an incredibly risky business. And, you know, just last month we did a story with you guys in Iceland showing how Amgen uses genetics to help its drug discovery. Some are wondering, you know, even when you have those clues and that kind of tool, it doesn't make everything perfect. This is a really hard thing to do.
Indeed it is. Meg, thank you so much. Meg Terrell at the New York Stock Exchange.
Agilent Technologies tops the street estimates, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The lab equipment company saw both profit and revenue rise in the latest quarter, saying that strength in its chemical and energy business helped results. Agilent also saw that its strong revenue growth in Asia and Europe. Shares initially rose in after-hours trading, but finished the regular session down slightly to $56.08. And the months-long proxy fight between specialty metals maker Arconic and its largest shareholder appears to be over. Arconic saying that it has agreed to let activist hedge fund Elliott Management nominate three members to its board of directors, while Arconic will name two candidates. Arconic shares rose fractionally to $27.63. And Advanced Micro Devices shares took a hit after the CEO made comments that seemed to squash speculation that the semiconductor maker entered into a licensing deal with Intel. AMD said that it's, quote, not looking at enabling a competitor to compete against our products, end quote. And that news sent shares down more than 3% to $11.04 today.
U.S.-based specialty chemicals maker Huntsman said it's merging with Switzerland's Clariant in a $14 billion deal. The combined entity will be called Huntsman Clariant, and it has an enterprise value of $20 billion. Huntsman shares were off 2% to $26.15. Former managers of the solar energy company Sunrun say they were instructed by their bosses to delay releasing data ahead of that company's initial public offering in 2015 that showed canceled customer contracts. According to the Wall Street Journal, one manager said there was an internal push to get as many sales through and not to report the cancellations. Shares of the small cap fell almost 3% to $4.90. And China's Cheetah Mobile reported earnings for the latest quarter that the street liked. The mobile internet company posted revenue that grew and said that much of that gain was driven by demand for content-driven apps. Shares of Cheetah Mobile rose about 7.5% to $11.34.
Netflix has been a public company now for 15 years. How time flies. It started out, of course, as a DVD-by-mail company, but today it's very different, a digital global powerhouse. And get this, shares are up by more than 14,000% since it first started trading. Julia Borsten takes a look now at what lies next for Netflix.
Netflix and its CEO, Reed Hastings, have changed quite a bit from the days of red envelopes delivered by the Postal Service. At its IPO, Netflix had 600,000 subscribers only in the U.S., paying $20 a month for DVDs by mail, with about 11,000 titles. Now, Netflix is a global entertainment powerhouse, with 100 million subscribers in over 190 countries, paying about $10 a month for streaming, distinguished by its original content. And according to an early shareholder, Netflix's success is driven by its CEO's vision.
Reed is an incredibly gracious and humble guy, so he's probably going to cringe when I say this, but he is wicked smart. And I don't mean in the "I'm the smartest guy in the room" sense. I mean someone who's capable of thinking at first principles and yet also at the visionary level.
Though the number of titles Netflix offers varies from country to country, the company says it streams more than 125 million hours a day. And Netflix's growth will come from continued global expansion and more exclusive content. The company is releasing more than 1,000 hours of originals this year and spending more than $6 billion on content, saying it has no plans to move into live news or sports, but it's doing everything else.
Original content, it's the marketing engine for the company. People watch it for the shows that are on, and you want the shows branded as your service. The other is people have recognized that they're more and more competitive. And so traditional players are less likely to be open to licensing them content, or at least some of them are. And so you have to have an ability to fill the pipeline.
Hargraves says that while he sees plenty of room for Netflix to continue its global growth and to leverage its data about how and what people watch, but the company's biggest challenge is more alternatives from traditional media companies. There's also the question of whether the company will have to get into live sports, which it says it's staying away from, if it wants to be truly competitive. And Netflix, of course, needs to execute. CEO Reed Hastings needs to make sure the company continues to have the movies and shows people need to see. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Boorstin in Los Angeles.
Coming up, so you think you know economics?
Who wrote Das Kapital and what other famous book did he or she write?
You have 15 seconds, you may confer.
Well, 11,000 kids from 40 states test their knowledge in a national challenge, but only one team was victorious. Here's a look at what to watch for tomorrow. The White House releases its proposed budget for the 2018 fiscal year. With the supply of existing homes for sale at historic lows, the focus will be on the release of April's new home sales. Amazon meets with its shareholders. CEO Jeff Bezos is expected to lay out his vision for the company over the next year. And that's what to watch for on Tuesday.
Meantime, regulators are investigating a pair of recalls from Hyundai and Kia. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration wants more information on the timing of those recalls. The agency is also looking to determine whether it covered as many vehicles as it should have. The recall is related to an engine defect and currently affects more than 1.5 million vehicles.
The United States collected less personal income tax revenue in April than a year earlier. According to analysis done by Reuters, it appears as if high earners shifted their income to next year, hoping that the federal government passes tax cuts. Taxes on wages and investment income are key revenue sources for the states that collect them. April is the most important revenue month because, of course, it's the tax filing deadline.
All right, high school whiz kids who could one day be the next Janet Yellen. The best and brightest students are testing their knowledge of economics in the National Economics Challenge. Our Steve Leisman hosted the competition. He got to award the one team championship trophy.
They're dancers, musicians, basketball players, and wrestlers. 11,000 unique kids from 40 different states, but they have something in common. They're just about as smart as they come, and they study and really get economics. And the division winners faced off today in the finals of the annual National Economics Challenge. Call it the National Spelling Bee for Economics. And you can't believe the drama, and you can't believe the brains.
Karl Marx and the other famous work is The Communist Manifesto.
In the Adam Smith Advanced Economics Division, after more than 20 questions, the teams from Mounds View High School in Arden Hills, Minnesota, and Chattahoochee High School in Georgia were neck and neck.
The score is now 12-11.
In the end, Mounds View pulled out a win for the fifth time in 7 years.
The equilibrium price and quantity will not change.
That's correct.
Mounds View economics teacher credits her student success to hard work and making economics fun.
You're not going to get the kids there by like beating them over the head or, you know, making them take more tests. They have to be doing it because it's fun for them.
The competition also featured a first ever international round with students from China competing against the U.S.
For country A, it's 18 years, and for country B, it's 9 years.
That is correct.
The U.S. won both rounds, but China competed well, and they'll be back. The challenge is sponsored by the Council for Economic Education, who teaches teachers how to teach economics.
We're trying to get kids just like these engaged in economics so that they can make great decisions and understand how the world works.
Among the products of this effort are kids like Dentner.
Hayek.
Why Hayek? Frederick Hayek, Austrian economist, Austrian school. Why?
Freer the markets, the freer the people.
We could do a lot worse than raise a few more kids like that. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Steve Leisman in New York.
The freer the markets, the freer the people.
That's our future, and I'm very hopeful about that. Not to take sides, but I was kind of rooting for Chattahoochee High School. I have some family in that part of Georgia, I just like saying Chattahoochee anyway.
They'll be back next year.
I suspect they will.
On that note, that's Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for watching.
I'm Bill Griffith. Have a great evening. We'll see you tomorrow.